Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today as we talk about companion animals and emotions. And here with me in studio is Patricia Trish McConnell of Black Earth, Wisconsin. She's an adjunct associate professor of zoology at the UW-Madison, an animal behaviorist, a co-host of the erstwhile radio program Calling All Pets. She's the co-author and author of many books, and it's a real pleasure to have Trish in studio today. All I ever do is get a chance to hear you on the radio, and here you are.
It's fun to be here.
And so if people would like to join this conversation to talk about companion animals, especially dogs, and emotions, then you can call us at 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. And you're going to be busy this week. You're going to be in Milwaukee on Thursday night for a talk there.
Right. I'm speaking about emotions in people and dogs for the Wisconsin Humane Association. It's at the Downtown Library Auditorium, and it should be really, really fun.
What time will it get started?
It starts at 7, mm-hmm. and you can go to the Wisconsin Humane Society website, or you can go to my website. It's just my name, patriciamcconnell.com, because you do have to register. Mm-hmm. It's $15 at the door, and I think there are 350 people coming already, but there's lots of rooms.
There's lots of room.
Yeah,
so
we're going to have a great time, yeah.
Okay. So your web address is patriciamcconnell.com. And, of course, you also have your blog going there, theotherendoftheleash.com.
I do.
Talk about that.
I do. I always thought a blog was something that you would go to a doctor to have removed or something. I mean, I just was never into the blogosphere. But I started, boy, I don't know, 6 months or so ago, Jim. And I love it. It is wonderful. I'm in a conversation with people all around the world. It's so much fun. It's just fascinating. I basically write about animal behavior. I write about my animals. I write about the farm. I write about the sheep. I write about interesting talks I just heard at a conference I've just been to, for example, interesting research that comes up, sort of telling people about new fun books that are out. Mm-hmm. So it's a conversation for people who are interested in animal behavior. And it's really fun. I've actually really enjoyed it. I'm being drug into the new century, Jim. I'm not twittering yet, but now I'm walking.
I'm not even shaking, so I can't twitter. Emotion is a word that we all know, but when you think about it, emotions are really hard to define. What do you say an emotion is?
Well, it is a really great question, isn't it? I mean, it's not a word that we go look up in the dictionary. It's like, well, we all know what emotions are. But if I ask somebody, if I ask your listeners, define emotions to somebody who doesn't have one, it's really hard to do. You know, I mean, think about it. How would you describe an emotion? So that's, I think, part of why they've been so controversial. But now we have neurobiologists who have studied it carefully, and basically the current definition of emotions is comprised of three things. One, internal changes in response to something that happens, and those internal changes are activation in a brain center or neurotransmitters starting to communicate between neurons, and then the flooding of hormones that goes through the body. So all these internal changes.
Mm-hmm.
And then along with that are the external changes, like the change in your face if you see your dog running towards the road. You know, your heart will start to increase, but your face will look that sort of panicky, fear-based expression you get on your face. So internal changes, one. External changes, two. And third, and this is the really interesting one, the thoughts and feelings that go along with those changes. And that's the part that we're not sure how much is the same with our companion animals and how much is different. Number one and two, almost perfectly replicated. But because our cognition is so complicated and because we have so many thoughts that go along with our emotions, that's probably where we diverge a little bit between our perception of emotions and dogs and cats, for example. But it's a glass half empty and a glass half full.
This controversy about emotions in animals, is this a new topic, or is this resurfacing after, you know, a few years of not being thought of that much?
Yeah, it's a really good question. The the way we've looked at emotions is like a roller coaster. It's for centuries and centuries people have actually been interested in this, and we sort of change as a culture about how we feel about other animals, non-human animals having emotions. So Darwin, one of his most famous books actually, was a bestseller in the time in the 1800s, wrote The Expression of Emotion in Man and Animals. It was a big bestseller, and it was an addendum really to The Descent of Man, in which it was another sort of proof of the pudding for him to use as evidence for our relationship, our closely, you know, mm-hmm. sort of genetic relationship to other animals. And so Darwin had no trouble talking about, he has my favorite line from that book is, even cows, when they frisk about from pleasure, throw their tails up in a ridiculous fashion. I love that image. So Darwin was perfectly comfortable attributing emotions to animals. A century before, Descartes was not. The famous French philosopher, I think, therefore I am, mm-hmm. basically said, if you can't think, you have no awareness. So he did horrible things to dogs. He would nail them up to the side of a barn and do horrible things I don't even want to describe. And said, no, they're not feeling anything. You don't need to feel sorry for them. They're just like clocks because they can't think. Therefore, they have no awareness and no emotions and no feelings. So what a history, you know? We've got a long history. What happened in the mid-1900s in this country also had a big effect. American behaviorists like Watson and especially B.F. Skinner never argue that animals don't have emotions. They never said that. What they said, what Skinner especially said, is you can't study them. So you can't study them scientifically, so we shouldn't talk about them as scientists. But he never said they don't have them. But that morphed. That sort of evolved into like, well, no, I guess animals, we can't talk about emotions in animals, somehow, therefore, they don't have any. So it's still a great controversy. Start a talk at a dinner party, and I guarantee you, you can get a big argument going about, especially a specific emotions. You know, most people will say, yeah, well, dogs can feel fear, but can sheep? And can dogs get angry? And I was amazed at how many different viewpoints there are, even in this century, in this year, about emotions and non-human animals.
If you'd like to join the conversation with Trish McConnell, all you have to do is give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 as we talk some about emotions. Let's see what Sally has on her mind, and Sally's in Sun Prairie. Hi, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm just wondering, I have a 3-year-old Shih Tzu rescue. Well, I've had him for 3 years. He's almost 9. And this week I will be picking up a 4-year-old rescue from the Humane Society. And both of them are pretty shy, cautious dogs, very reserved. I'm wondering if you can give me advice on how to introduce this new dog into the house, how to get
sure.
them to... You know, not just throw them together.
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right to not just throw them together. You know, the best thing you can do is to let them meet each other outside of the house. And I like to start dogs really slowly. So what you might want to do is have each of them on leash and take them on a walk where they're walking sort of parallel beside each other, but there's 20 feet between them. And let them mark territory. Let one urinate on the ground and then move that dog away. Let the other dog come and sniff that urine. You know, mm-hmm. it's a great way for them to get to know each other without having a nose under the tail and that sort of close encounter, you know, where you can get a lot of tension. So that's a great thing to do, first of all. If you can have them actually meet off territory again in maybe a safe fenced area, maybe a neutral area would be ideal. If you don't have an area like that, you're best to do it in a backyard. But one of the things to think about is how much experience has your 9-year-old had with other dogs? Does your 9-year-old get along with other dogs in general?
He does general. He was pretty under-socialized when we got him. We did have another dog in the house when he came, but
okay.
she was very old and elderly.
Okay.
But we walk him a lot, and, you know, he meets other dogs fine. He did have an initial meet with this dog.
Good.
And they said that he reacted how they would have expected, pretty much just leave me alone and
yeah.
kind of went off. And
yeah. Good. Okay. Well, that's good. I'm glad he gets along relatively well mm-hmm. with other dogs. It's always different in the house,
right,
you know.
Right.
So one thing you might want to do is don't hesitate for a while to keep the dogs separate part of the time. You know, okay. let your resident older dog have plenty of time where he's just off on his own. He's okay. not going to get bothered. Mm-hmm. You know, give him a nice sort of safe place. I would suggest teaching the youngster or the new one coming in to be crate trained, to be comfortable and happy in a crate.
Okay.
And maybe have that crate in some cozy, comfy room, and you can shut the door and let the resident dog have some time.
Okay.
And then, you know, gradually let them interact. And you okay. might want to also, before you bring them together, just have a couple of cues that you use mastered.
Okay.
You know, it's really nice to be sure that you have some verbal control. So I like to teach dogs, like, leave it, meaning just turn your head away and look at me, and you
okay.
do that with food, make it really fun.
Okay.
That's described in some of my books, so that's easy to find if you want to.
Okay.
You might want to get a trainer who could even come help you, just be, you know, a personal trainer,
okay.
come to the house for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Would definitely be worth one session.
Okay.
But it's nice to be able to when you know, when you do let them interact, to be able to say, get back. Now
okay.
lie down. You stay there for a minute. So the more control you can get over each of them, as long as you keep it friendly and low-key,
okay.
the better things will go as well.
Okay. That's a good place to start.
Yeah, good
Great.
Luck.
Thank you a lot.
All right. Thank you very much. We had an email from Stanley, Wisconsin, from Daryl, who would like to get a dog but needs some help discerning which breed dog would be part outside, part inside. Is there a breed that is ideal for this combined living?
Yeah, so we're in Wisconsin here, so
yeah.
we're going to eliminate things like greyhounds, you know.
Boston Terriers.
Boston Terriers. Jim is smiling. Jim has a Boston Terrier.
Two of them now.
Two?
Yeah.
No kidding. Oh, that's so fun. I got to meet one of them. But, yeah, there's certain breeds that just don't do well. They're thin-skinned. Boston Terrier is one of them. A lot of the sighthounds, Whippets, Greyhounds, they're very thin-skinned. They don't do particularly well outside either. Some of the lap dogs, King Charles, you know, Spaniels are probably not going to be ideal.
No.
So you know, Labs, I mean, there's so many issues about what is the right dog for you. I'm actually going to be speaking at the vet school next Tuesday about picking the right dog for you. And so I've been thinking about that issue a lot, and there's so many things that go into it. You know, what is your activity level? I mean, the great thing about Labs for many of us is that they're so active, you know.
Trish, let me interrupt and say that we'll come back after the news and we'll pick up on making a selection, maybe from Humane Society or something like that, or picking a particular breed. And we'll do that after the news here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you with us today as we talk about animals and emotions. And just before the news, Trish McConnell, we had a call from Sun Prairie in which the question was about picking a dog. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, part of his question was he needed a dog who was an indoor-outdoor dog.
Mm-hmm.
So part of that is definitely about breed. You know, Huskies, Labradors, Border Collies, Aussies, you know, a lot of those dogs are very, very hardy as long as they have time to adjust to the cold weather and they have a good dry, draft-free place to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I think beyond that, I think the question is, you know, is what does the family want? And I think the best thing that people can do is, besides just thinking about size and, you know, what do we want the dog to look like, which we're very influenced by looks, aren't we? You know, it makes
we are
a
indeed.
Big little cute little face. You know, we can end up taking a dog home that maybe wasn't the right dog for us. What I suggest people do is look at your life now. Don't get a dog and say, oh, I'll get a Husky because I know they need a lot of exercise and I don't get any now. And I, you know, and that will get me, you know,
right.
to get
exercise. That'll spur me on.
Right. Don't do that to yourself. It will spur on guilt. Because to look at what you do now, look at, you know, how active you want to be. And I think activity levels is a huge part of it. So do you want a breed that was bred to work? Like a Labrador or a German Shorthair Pointer or a Border Collie. Don't get those dogs if you don't want to be outside a lot and taking a lot of long walks and throwing a lot of frisbees. If you want a lot, you know, if you go home and you're done with work and you're tired and you want to turn on you know, the television and watch a movie or watch the news and read the paper, get a retired racing greyhound. You know, it's not true that the big dogs all need lots of exercise. Some of the best couch potato dogs, believe it or not, are retired racing greyhounds. They need to run free, loose, hopefully in a fenced yard, twice a week. And otherwise, they're perfectly happy to lie around. Now, not for this person in some prairie because they can't be outside so well. But so look at activity levels. Look at whether you have children or not. Some dogs are very reactive and lots of kids screaming and yelling and, you know, making little fun kid noises and running around the house. Very hard for some of the herding dogs. They just, they want, you know, they can't just watch it. They want to chase. They want to herd. They want to, you know, sometimes nip. So that's one of the issues. And the other issue is learn something about some of the temperament tests and the personality tests that are out there, because breed is one thing, but every breed has, they're not clones, you know, every breed has individuals within them. So, you know, look at how affiliative do you want a dog to be? Do you need a dog who, if a child took a bone away from them, is not going to react by turning and snapping or something? You know, do some of those temperament tests that are out there and have somebody who knows dogs really well help you, who can help interpret that. And then take the one who fits your family the best.
Sounds good. Good advice. And if you'd like to join the conversation, lines are full at the moment, but the number is 800-642-1234. Let's go to Sally in Sun Prairie next. Hi, Sally. All right. So let's try Carol in Caledonia. Hi, Carol.
Hi. We had two Aussies, a 14-year-old and a just-turned 1-year-old. Unfortunately, there was an accident here on the farm this morning, and we had to put the 14-year-old down.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it's been a rough day.
Yeah.
His name was Zip, and Rocket just turned 1 year old, basically has been mentored by Zip.
Okay.
And I know that he's going to really miss him, and I wondered what we might be able to do to help him through this.
That's a really good question, and aren't you sweet to be thinking of it? It is really hard on those younger dogs who came in. You had a dog there. Their whole life has always been with this other dog, you know? So the one thing I can say that sounds sort of trivial, but it's really true, is that time helps dogs as much as it does people. The first couple of weeks can be very, very hard for dogs like yours, like your youngster. And so, you know, you just have to remember that time can help tremendously. It's great if you can maybe get his mind busy. Teach him some new routines. Teach him some tricks. You know, you had an Aussie, you know, smart, smart dog. So teach him some tricks. Make it really fun. You know, this isn't obedience kind of stuff. Don't worry about whether he does it right or not. Make it fun and joyful. Use treats. Teach him some fun tricks. There are a lot of books out there that have some fun tricks in them. Take him places maybe if he likes to go out and about where he's never been before. And at the same time, there's nothing wrong with comforting him. Don't believe that foolish advice that if you sit and pet him, you'll be reinforcing him for feeling sad. So, you know, that's just that's sort of the worst of Watson in 1930. He was, never pick up your child and kiss them because you might be reinforcing something you don't like. It's like, good grief. You know, there's nothing wrong with sitting and comforting and cuddling and belly rubbing. There's nothing wrong with that for both of you. You know, you need it too. And then don't get another dog until you're ready. You know, I'd probably get a female since you have a young male. The odds are a little better. Introduce them slowly and gradually. Try and get a pretty mellow female. But don't get one for him. Don't get one until you guys are ready, okay?
Okay. We actually didn't plan to get a second dog.
Okay.
Is that okay, or should we get a second dog?
It's a really good question. How affiliative to you guys is it Zeb?
Rocket.
Zeb is, yeah. Okay, so how affiliative to you is Rocket? Is he, like, loves to be with you all the time, looks at you, pays a lot of attention to you?
Very much so. He is, if there's a class clown, it's Rocket.
Yeah.
He's all about play. He's all about fun. He doesn't realize he's a working dog. he just incessantly loves to play ball.
Great.
He runs with me. We go to the state park and we hike. And Zip, at 14, was too old to do those things. So he was the companion in the yard when I was in the house or my husband, you know, when we weren't outside.
Yeah.
Zip was was kind of the companion then. But as far as playing, Zip was really too old to play with Rocket.
Gotcha. I think he'll be fine then. I think in a perfect ideal world, which I don't live in, perfect ideal world, I wouldn't work anymore. and I'd have a trust fund, right? But for dogs in an ideal world, they would have dog buddies because, you know, it's the same species. You know, it's just we're such fun for them, but we're also tiring because they just have to always be translating and interpreting what we're saying. And I think there's nothing like being with your own kind. You know, it's like when you travel and you meet an American in, you know, the jungle of Brazil or something, it's like, hi! You know? So I think for some dogs, it's really nice to have some contact, maybe even sometimes twice a week or so. I have two dogs and my young one has some dog buddies and we see them sometimes just once a week. So I think that can be good. But in general, I think he sounds like he's really happy with you guys. And I wouldn't worry about not getting another dog.
Okay. And we can reevaluate that if things don't seem like they're...
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. Give it some time. Things are really fresh right now.
Yeah.
Right now, take care of yourself and him. You know, when you're both grieving and this is a really hard time to go through. So be really kind to yourself. Do lots of good things for yourself.
Okay.
All right, Carol, thanks very much. Appreciate hearing from you. Michael in Milwaukee, let's give you a chance to get into the conversation. Go ahead.
Yes, hi, Jim and Patricia. How are you?
We're
good. Fine.
Good. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, yes, we can hear you fine.
good. I would like to divert a bit here. I do have a cat. Is that okay to talk about my cat?
Absolutely.
All right.
Okay, excellent. Well, let me just start by saying that animals have always been a large part of my life. When I was a child, we had 3 acres of land, and Dad bought all kinds of animals. Just, I don't know, it was like an ark, you know, from rabbits to goats, chickens, geese. We raised mink. The only problem is... I found out then at Christmas time a couple times we were kind of hard up, and one of my favorite pets was on the dinner table. So,
oh dear,
yeah, number 3 goose.
Ouch.
You know, I had them all numbered and you know all that stuff, and I, you know, but it was very interesting childhood. But we also raised collie dogs, which I was, you know, I mean, to have those puppies and just be part of the childbirthing, you know, the puppy birthing.
Oh
thing.
Yeah, what a great experience.
Oh, I know, and it was so great. But then I found myself fairly recently, you know, without a lot of means, and so cat was my, especially after the divorce and that. And, cat ended up saving my life, but when the house was on fire, he woke me up, one of the two cats. But,
oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and so, you know, I've had this extreme closeness with animals. But my question, I don't know if it's a question, is that I have a cat, Peanut, and he is so close to me, but he's so close nowadays, like he's in love with me, you know, and I you know, it sounds kind of perverted, but he's kind of, we're on a schedule, like after dinner, he wants me to recline in the chair, and then he comes up and he puts his paws on me, and
yeah.
You know, and that.
Uh-huh.
And, right, and he does, it's a ritual thing, you know, but he waits for me to get done. But if I'm not done with dinner at a certain, you know, he gives me a certain period of time and he waits patiently for me, then he gets impatient and he swats at my ankle.
Whoa, you know, I think there are a lot of animals who can get like that, you know, and there,
yeah.
we know people who get like that,
mm-hmm.
too. And I think patience and flexibility is a really, really good thing to teach our companion animals. I actually try to go out of my way sometimes. And sometimes I have to, Jim, I just have to force myself because it's so easy to fall into a routine. And sometimes you have to, like, sort of gather some extra energy to break it.
Right.
But every once in a while, I'll force myself to break my routine because I don't want my dogs and my cat, I have one too, I don't want my two dogs and my cat to get so fixated on a routine that they can't be flexible. So if your cat is batting at you, I would definitely not reinforce that. You know, your cat bats you in the leg and you go like, oh, yeah, I forgot it's time. I'll go over and get on the couch and we can do our little cuddle time. Mm-mm, do not do that. I would do the opposite. I mean, I would basically start paying attention to your schedule and try to go to the couch when at least 30 seconds have gone by, and then a minute, and then 5 minutes eventually, and 10 minutes where he hasn't batted at you. So if he bats, I would maybe just make a shh sound like that. I would ignore him. You could make a little noise that would just not scare him, but startle him a little bit just to get him to stop doing it, and then wait a little bit. And the trick is to not grease the squeaky wheel. The trick is to grease it when it's not squeaking, and that takes a lot of concentration and energy. So you go to the couch when he's being good, but start purposely changing your routine just a little bit so that he can be flexible, because, you know, things happen. And say you get a little sick, or you have to travel because one of your relatives is sick or something. And I don't want you to have a cat who literally can't cope with there being change in his life.
And it sounds like the cat is sort of being set up for that as time goes on.
It could happen inadvertently. That's mm-hmm. right. And it's easy, like I said, it's easy to get into. You know, we just all get into our routines, but life happens, you know. So it's good it's good for us. It's good for our animals to be flexible.
Well, Michael, good luck to you and to Peanut. And we'll go next to Laura in Milwaukee. Hi, Laura.
Hi. I have a question about dogs and emotions. I have a 4-year-old rescue Doberman with obsessive compulsive problems.
Really?
And I'm reading a lot in the course of dealing with this that sometimes it's not strictly obsessive compulsive, because it usually is when I'm there.
What does your dog do? Tell us what your dog does.
It's mainly a light sparkle type of thing, or light reflection obsession.
Okay, so if a car goes by or something and the lights shine...
Let's say something around the house makes that kind of like a glassware when you unload the dishwasher.
Okay.
You know, and it results in grabbing something, anything in his mouth, and trying to rip it up as almost like a pacifier.
So when he sees something sparkle,
yeah,
he looks for something to bite on,
yeah,
put in his mouth,
right,
and then shakes it?
Shreds it, yeah.
Shreds it. Okay, almost as if he's, like, anxious or sort
yes.
of nervous or desperate about this.
Yes, very pacing, prancing.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
The something in his mouth will contain, if you didn't have it in his mouth, he'll just start pouncing, barking, and completely going over the top.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds like it well could be. It'd be great if you could see a certified applied animal behaviorist or a board-certified veterinarian to
yeah.
actually diagnose OCD. It does seem to occur in dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And at the extreme levels, sort of at the very far end of the spectrum, there are medications that you could talk to your veterinarian about.
He takes clomipramine, I believe.
Okay. Clomipramine is, and again, this is something you should talk to your veterinarian, but as a
yeah.
behaviorist, I can tell you clomipramine is usually used as an anxiety medication.
Okay.
So it's federally approved to be used for things like separation anxiety.
Okay.
That's different than obsessive compulsive disorder.
See, that's where I'm.
I want you to talk to your veterinarian again, and this is very much between you and your vet, but the medication that has been tested for OCD is fluoxetine. That's Prozac.
Oh, okay.
Basically. So that's sort of the far end of the spectrum. It's something for you to talk to a veterinarian about.
Mm-hmm.
At the other end, sometimes when it's not too bad, there's a lot of behavior modification you can do.
Yes.
So
we've been for a year. It's helping.
Okay. So what have you been doing?
Redirect.
Okay.
Redirect, or I actually sometimes get to the point where I shake a spray bottle. He doesn't like the spray bottle of water.
Just to interrupt.
Yeah, interrupt,
uh-huh.
redirect.
Mm-hmm.
We've recreate trained him.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess this would not be an anxiety disorder, obsessive compulsive?
Well, that's a really good question. And here's what I would argue is that obsessions can create anxiety.
Right.
But the main problem is not anxiety. That's kind of a side effect.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
That was my question. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're absolutely right that it's at sort of low levels of this problem. Redirecting and teaching an alternative behavior is a really, really good idea. And whether you'd be doing it exactly like I'm doing, you know, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I'd have to work with you. But I've seen some real success with that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely, I don't know, have you been working with a professional on that?
I haven't gone to a behaviorist yet. I've done a lot of reading.
Good for you. Directing. Yeah, you might want to consider having somebody come in who really knows how to deal with this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And uses nothing but positive reinforcement for this. This is not something you
See,
can
that's
punish.
Any form of correction.
Do not let anybody come in and say this is about dominance or alpha or
right.
no, do not use corrections here. You'll just make it worse.
I've been told it could be a form of separation. separation anxiety because it's generally involves when I'm, it doesn't happen when I'm not there, or sometimes when my husband is there, it does.
Yeah, but see, that's that doesn't separation yeah. anxiety is when you're gone. So that yeah. that couldn't have anything to do with it.
But then he's anxious about my presence or
but
something.
But you know, there's one other thing that one, if you could get somebody in to sort of help you with your timing and exactly what
right.
behaviors are you asking him to do, sometimes picking the right one can make a big difference. But additionally, just one more thing I want you to think about
mm-hmm.
is I don't know how you feel about alternative medicine, but you might want to talk to your veterinarian about a good alternative holistic practitioner.
Really?
My clients have had, and I personally, I have my problem dog,
mm-hmm.
Works with a woman who is board certified in Chinese medicine. She is a DVM, and that's very important to me. She's
yeah.
she's trained in Western medicine. I've worked with two Chinese medicine specialists. Both of them are, again, DVMs. They have full Western medicine training, but then they have gone beyond and taken years of training in Chinese medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my dogs is on Chinese herbs that help him be less reactive.
Really?
And another issue is diet. Diet can play a tremendously important role in reactivity.
Yeah, that's another.
Tremendously yeah. important. Yeah. So what kind of protein he's on, what kind of food he's on, that's a whole other
right,
world you can look in.
Right, I took him off a higher protein because I read that was
yeah.
a trigger.
Yeah, but even the kind of protein, is it chicken or is it duck? Is
yeah.
it cod or is it lamb? You know, my dogs
okay.
don't eat chicken or lamb. They eat cooling foods rather than warming foods. So,
okay.
so that's a whole other area to look into. And there's some people in the Milwaukee area.
Oh.
Chris Besent is a veterinarian who's a Chinese medicine specialist who isn't too far away from you.
Besent.
Okay. Yeah. So good luck. Good luck.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That helps.
All right, Laura, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate hearing from you, and let's go next to Jeanette in La Crosse. Hi, Jeanette.
Hi. It's so nice to talk to you. I have a question about how two dogs interact with each other.
Okay.
I have a Yorkie that we've had for 11 years. She's been the only dog, and she loves to go for walks and everything, but being 11, she has diminished vision because she has cataracts.
Okay.
Forming in her eyes, you know.
Okay.
But she loves to go for walks. She's the only dog. Well, recently, last couple of months, I noticed that my neighbor across the way that has multiple sclerosis, she can't walk her young Peek-a-Poo. And so my husband and I, we've been trying to walk her dog along with our dog, you know, to take them together
oh,
so they can
sweet.
Both get exercise. Yeah, it's fun. It's the dog is she watches out the window and she looks for us and she sees us she just goes nuts. But
aww.
We call her a bullet on a string because she's so full of energy. So we take her. We decided since she runs my legs off, we take her out in the country and then we let both dogs off and they run free. But what happens is the young Peek-a-Poo wants to play with our Yorkie, and she'll come. She'll be like two blocks away and she'll run full bore and bonsai our dog, and our dog is just traumatized. And can't stand this Peek-a-Poo. What should we do?
Oh, yeah, that can be a really, really big problem, you know. And I'm glad you're calling because I would absolutely never let this happen again. You know, it's tricky because there you are. It's like you want him to run. You want him to get exercise, but eep. So first of all, until you have the kind of verbal control that you need to be able to prevent this, I would just not let it happen. I know it's not convenient, but I would take them out separately and let them run separately, or I would keep the neighbor's dog on a leash and let yours run free. So tonight that's what I do. If you want to work your way up to using verbal control and training to work on this, what I would do is first of all, as the young dog started running towards my older one, I would tell it to stop. And I would train it first in a different context to stop, to whoa. I love to say whoa. I used to ride horses a lot. It just comes out of my mouth really easily. Whoa. But you don't just say it and think like if you yell it, it'll work. You know, you train it to stop in all kinds of different contexts. And so I would try that. If the dog kept going and slammed into your other dog, which I hope will never happen again, I would get in between the dogs and I would face the problem dog, the little Peek, and I would back her up just sort of using your body like a like a body block. Don't kick at her or anything. Just walk towards her until she sort of has to back up. And I like to talk to them when I'm, you know, in this kind of context, and I say, you know, like things like, you know, I'm not happy with you. You know, I don't like you or your hair either. And then tell her to lie down and stay. And sometimes you can do that maybe two or three times and then they'll stop, but you need a lot of control to do that. So for now, the quick fix is, I'm so sorry, but just do not let her do that again. I've seen dogs with very serious injuries and that quote playfulness, not so much. Not play.
Trish, the time has flown all too rapidly. I look forward to seeing you again. Thanks very much for coming and spending time with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Jim.
And you've got that talk coming up Thursday night in Milwaukee, 7 o'clock. And where will that be?
It's at the auditorium at the downtown Milwaukee Library.
Public Library.
Yeah. It'll be really fun. It's a partly a benefit for Wisconsin Humane Society.
So all right. PatriciaMcConnell.com is the place to get more information. Thanks to Sarah Carroll for on-air phone production today. I'm Jim Packard.